Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Breathe in, stop your heart, let go. My next interview is with Tina Keeper and Don McKellar. I take notes, as you can probably all well imagine, when I'm interviewing guests on Face to Face. And I've got them written in here as Tina and Don, so clearly we're on a first-name basis. This was a real pleasure for me to do this interview. Don McKellar, Tina Keeper, talking about their new film, Through Black Spruce, a Canadian a masterpiece. Can I say that, Don? Am I allowed to say that? I so love this film. You're going to need to get out and see it. It's an important film. It's a film that touches on a whole lot of things, and it's told in a really a beautiful and a metaphorical way, but it's a compelling narrative that will draw you in, and it's full of surprises and wonderful performances as well. We talk about prejudice. We talk about Canadian land rights. We talk about self-control and about truth and stories and about what is the heart, you know, of a family story. We talk about what it means to be embraced by a community and responsibility and deeply existential things, and about urban Indigenous youth. I mean, this is a serious film, but it's an entertaining piece as well, and it's done in such a beautiful way. And I'm such a huge fan of Don's, and it comes out in the interview. I hope you hear it. And what a generous pair, Don McKellar and Tina Keeper, coming right up my interview with them about their new wonderful new film, Through Black Spruce. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my speaking and my writing, and also facetofacelive.ca for a whole host of other interviews with filmmakers and writers. And we're focusing on the Toronto International Film Festival over the next little while, that's for sure. Don't touch that dial. And if you can, and if you're interested in what we're doing here and you're coming alongside it or would like to come alongside it in some way, you can do that through patreon.com and support us there. Or if you can't do that, and I totally understand that, I'd love it if you left a review for me on iTunes. That would go a long way. A real treat coming up, Don McKellar and Tina Keeper, Through Black Spruce. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here today. I can't believe, actually, I'm sitting around. It, in fact, is a round table. Don
it's
McKellar.
Face to face to face.
Face to face to face. Do you remember an old MASH episode where there was like five colonels standing around and colonel? That's where I went.
Okay.
So we've got a couple waters, a coffee, some cappuccino on the table. You're going to hear the relationships building here together at the Toronto International Film Festival. We're here to talk with Tina Keeper and Don McKellar about their new film, Through Black Spruce. Thank you so much for your time today. I've got to tell you, I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you. We're thrilled to be here as well.
As well, yes. we have lots to talk about. I and in a way, I'm not really sure where to begin, but I do want to say first, right out of the gate, congratulations.
Thank you.
I love the film. Mm-hmm. And I saw it in a screening. I didn't see it with like a real audience. It was journalists.
Well,
so
there have been no real audiences yet.
Oh, okay. So
mm-hmm. I mean, we premiere tonight.
That's right.
So you're excused.
I'm excused. Thank you for that. Thanks for that. So why don't we just jump right into? Did you wind up with the film, the story that you were hoping for?
Good one.
Tina?
Do you want me to start?
Tina has been with this for so long.
Okay,
that
yes.
She's the one, because she started...
Yeah, I optioned the book.
Many, many, many years ago.
Optioned the book.
Yeah, and 2012. You know what? Why don't you tell us a little bit about the book and a little bit about that context, too? That's probably not a bad idea.
So the film is an adaptation of the novel by Joseph Boyden through Black Spruce. I think it was published in 2006 or 2007. And it won a Giller Award in 07 or 08. And I had, I had read the book and reached out to Joseph Boyden about the option. And, I was able to get the option on the book. And so that was a long time ago. Our development process was stalled a bit because... there was an American company who had the option on Three Day Road, and there's a rifle that is a significant element, I guess, in both books. And so we had to get a rights release
for the rifle.
For the rifle, it was held up. Yeah, we couldn't go into
World War One surplus, wasn't it, in the film?
Yes, and we couldn't even start applications for writing without that rights release. So it took us a little bit of time and probably at least 18 months to, even start making applications.
You make it sound so simple. You read the book, you went for the rights. Clearly it had a huge impact on you.
The book?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. It was, I had read Three Day Road, and one of the interesting aspects of the book Three Day Road, I found, was the character of the aunt, who takes the boys, takes Xavier, and then the book before. But what I found interesting about it was my late mother is from that region. So my late mother is from the Treaty 9 territory, and my mother had been the first generation to be taken to residential school. So my grandparents and my extended family, of that generation, on my mother's side, did not speak English. Didn't even have a store. Like, we didn't even have a northern store in our community, and it was a flying community. So when I was a child, there wasn't even a winter road into the community. So it was very isolated and very still much this old culture. And so the shock of the change, the shock of the idea that they would take children away. I know that my grandfather, who did not go to residential school, his father, my great-grandfather, they had tried to take those kids away. But my great-grandfather, they still at that time, prior to whenever my mother went, 1944, 45, but for that previous generation, they still had this sense that, we are the authorities in our own land. Of our families and our communities. Like, that external authority hadn't sort of, reared its head in terms of, where they would arrest people if they couldn't take their children. So, that just didn't start to roll out until really it started to affect my grandparents' generation. So my mom was the first generation to go. But the point being that, these characters, really resonated with me. I had just felt that... I'd seen it in Thompson Highway's work, again, because he's from the north, a very similar type of culture and livelihood of his people. So I found that just really, really taken by the fact that I felt like I was seeing my family or my family's history in a book for the first time, in a novel. Right. And so that... I was really taken by his work, and I found with Three Black Spruce that there was a course. It resonated with me in many ways. And, you know, because my family's from the North, my parents went to residential school. You know, my parents had moved to the city when I was 5 because they didn't want me to be taken, you know, as kids to be taken to residential school. My brother was 6.
Is there a sense in which you could have written this book, do you think?
Could I have written this book? Never, but, you know, I can't write. But
that's a bit of a problem.
That's the real answer. But, I mean, I felt like my, you know, the story resonated with me on almost every level. So, you know, and even in terms of the relationship of the man to the niece, like, you know, this just loving relationship.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And one of the things, gorgeous, you know, I used to say was that, you know, because I worked in Ottawa, and I remember, like, you know, we would be talking about, like, issues around a lot of research projects. And sometimes I just felt like they were, people have this idea that Indigenous men were, you know, mean or scary or they're the cause of the violence. And, you know, I'd say, you know what, the kindest, the best example of men that I've had in my life are the Cree men in my life, my family. Like, I didn't grow up with that kind of, you know, and that's not to say other people haven't, because we've been through so much, but I was fortunate that I had that. And I feel that it hasn't really been represented either in film, where, you know, the sort of kindness and the really the sense of integrity within a family and how much that got ripped apart.
I have to say I'm getting goosebumps right now, yes, as I reflect back on the film. It's been a couple of weeks since I've seen it. I took copious notes. Do you have any idea how hard it is to take notes, careful notes, in a dark theater? It's not
Fortunately,
easy.
I do
it's
not know.
It's not easy. Yeah, fortunately. But the scene with the bear.
Oh, yeah. But can I just answer your initial question?
Go.
I will say it's not the film that I imagined it would be. Because, first of all, when I read the script, I really liked the script, I identified with it. But I had never been up there.
Right.
As far north as Richmond Hill? Is
that well, you know, I spent a lot of time in Northern Ontario, actually, a lot, but never that far north.
Right.
Not up to James Bay. I'd always wanted to. I'd read about it. And, in fact, as a little kid, I always said, oh, let's take the polar bear. I tried to persuade my parents to go up on the Polar Bear Express. But there's no road access, as you know, so it's not easy. But it would have been impossible for me to preconceive the film in that way until I'd seen that land and I'd seen those people. And they really informed, you know, this film was sort of initiated and I signed on as a collaborator. And part of that in my head was just to be open to the experience and to the people and not to prejudge. And so, and I, frankly, I was very surprised by the landscape up there in Moosonee. I'd never seen anything like that. Right. And so, and it was fascinating to me. And, you know, it was just, I really wanted to capture that feeling that underneath all this, the trauma, there was the land.
I think you captured it beautifully. I mean, the scene for me that really stands out, it really is a gorgeous film.
Yeah.
But Will?
Yeah, Will.
When he's, I guess, kind of on his own.
Yeah.
The rock. I know you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
The mosquitoes, the whole thing, the mud.
Yeah.
It's bloody gorgeous.
I mean, I'm glad you say that, because I will say that right from the beginning, I thought that section is sort of the heart of the film. It's sort of the spiritual heart of the film.
Yeah, that's great.
And
that makes sense. Well, it also, I think, goes back to your comment, you know, about his the spirit of generosity of him, probably as a person, but also as an actor, and also the character.
It's insane. I was saying this to Tina, that I've never worked with an actor who gave so much, so willingly.
It really comes through.
Brendan had very deep connection and very emotional connection, and just seeing the way he dealt with that, you know, like as a person, I don't even want to say how close it was to him, but there were some things that were really, really close to the bone for him. And
So were the
mosquitoes? I'm actually getting very moved when I think about how much.
Deeply moving. Did I say congratulations already? I hope
you
so.
You can keep saying it.
Yeah,
keep going.
Yeah. I hope everybody sees this film. Yeah. So were the mosquitoes a bit of your own sense of humor coming through? Was that?
Oh, God.
I think believe me, can, this, as Canadians,
believe
we can
me,
all,
the mosquitoes are no joke. It's not a joke. That's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I was sharing with my father's the mosquito stories about shooting. You know, some of Brandon's close-ups that we had shot in Moosonee because, you know, we shot in Moosonee for a few days, but we shot around Sudbury for a lot of the other northern scenes. But when we were in Moosonee and we were shooting and the sun was going down, I mean, there's literally hundreds buzzing around his head and he's doing this close-up where he's got to be taking a shot with this, you know, shotgun. I couldn't believe it. It was just incredible.
Just
so, of course,
focus on
my
that.
Dad starts telling me stories about when he was serving up around the Churchill area, and he's told me about one surveyor went home after the first day.
Yeah. I have a grandfather from the UK who came here in, like, the late 60s.
Yeah.
Went north to, I think, Barrie.
Never came back.
Never came back.
You can't believe them.
I'm pretty sure it was the mosquitoes, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. When I visited, I went up once in spring, and it's like, oh, my God, it's you know, how do you even barely go outside?
Right.
But I will say, though, to your point about my sense of humor, I do. I've always felt that, one of the really salient characteristics of Indigenous people, at least around here, is their sense of humor. Like, it's something that is really immediately apparent, mm-hmm. that they have, that they are funny.
Well, it comes out nicely, too, Graham Greene's character, right? It really does. A serious guy.
Just sort of allowing that to come up, you know.
Sure.
I never liked that thought it was a comedy or anything like that, but just allowing them to express themselves with humor is sort of key. Mm-hmm. And Will's friend Joe, for instance, like there's those guys up there, that's for sure.
Help me out here, but I think it's breathe in, stop your heart.
That's right.
Let go.
Yeah.
Pretty huge part of the film, it seems to me, on a, I don't know, spiritual level, maybe, to your point, existential level. I mean, is this about...
Well, I remember...
I mean, it begins and kind of ends.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I know that this is Barbara, the scriptwriter. She heard this from a hunter, and I think you're right. Something, the stopping your heart is... Because, which is, of course, impossible, something like that, but as Will Tozer said to me one time, but the idea that... You have to contain, through self-control, overcome the emotion, the sort of the depth of your emotions and the sort of history of trauma and focus on the job that needs to be done. I think that sort of message was key to the film.
Yes.
Well, the metaphor of the rifle.
Oh,
and,
sure, yeah.
You know, being on target. And I love the fact, isn't he through pretty much throughout the story and the film, messing around with the sights on the rifle as well, which
beginning.
Is brilliant.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's just so wonderful. And yet, when he needs to, clearly makes, several times the shot is made.
The shots are made, not to give anything away.
That's right.
Guns are fired.
Yeah. So, fictional story. I mean, I always am interested in this kind of, this is a story, it's a parable, it's true. It's a truth that points to a much greater and more important truth, if you will. There's a truth embedded in it. It comes out in so many different ways. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, wow, could you have picked a more serious story, to work with?
The thing is
layered.
For me, I will say that it wasn't until well into the project that I realized how true these things were and how, I didn't know the degree of fiction.
Right.
But again, I don't even want to say, but these stories are very close to people. And those sources of the story became our collaborators and gave us their stories, helped us tell their stories. It was actually a kind of shock to me and a real honor when I realized, oh my God, these things happened. Of course, lots is fictionalized and there's lots of things made. They're a fictional family, but just you can't avoid the reality, usually the harsh reality behind these things.
Yeah, and it's always kind of weird to me. I mean, I have a love for documentary film, and And it's, you know, that whole, oh, I think that film we just saw was based on real truth, you know, or based on true events. Well, what wasn't true about the story is a better question to me. Just because it was fictional doesn't
mean, of course.
It's, I find it kind of frustrating.
We're always after the truth, one way or the other.
Right. Yeah, as if we're as if we're all fact gatherers or something. And yet it points to some pretty significant breakdown in Canadian history, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
And obviously, so how close was that, would you say, to you and I mean, to the team while you were making the film?
How close?
Just the fact, how important this was to tell this story.
Well, I mean, of course, me personally, and well, obviously Tina too, there's almost no more important issue for Canada to face is, you know, to resolve the years of negligence, beyond negligence, you know, certainly it's evident in the North. And you know, like in so many ways, I just feel that those issues are crucially important to me. But having said that, I just didn't want to make a screed, you know. We didn't want to make a TV movie. We didn't want to load it down with facts or, I mean, the key thing I know for all of us was that it was a family. At the heart, it was a family story, and so, you know, it's all there. I mean, I think there's no avoiding the. I mean, my God, the sort of residential schools and the trauma, it's so present that you're not going to avoid it even if you tried.
Like even when we would visit with elders, you know, throughout the process, wherever we were, and of course in. When we were up in Moosonee, we were brought to meet with the elders, and they shared with us their stories immediately about the residential school experiences. Like it was
basically phenomenal. Behind their house.
Yes,
like I mean, it was basically
But they were just so open to us and just so so generous, and I mean. You know, I mean, like I said, this is my family story too, but it's like, I mean, to go into a community and to just feel like you're embraced by the community was really special. And all along, like just really trying, you know, like working in that way, it was a very special project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was a responsibility too. You sure felt that. I mean, I know Tina's had years of dealing with, like, as a sort of activist and a politician, dealing with head-on with, the issues, like the core issues, the missing and murdered women and children. But, you know, it's another thing entirely when you're actually with the people and with the actors.
Right.
Because the actors, everyone had connection to these stories.
Well, and now we're talking about that whole blend again, fact fiction, right?
Yes, exactly.
The truth of the story, but the truth of my history as well.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Here's a big one for you. Is it resolvable? I mean, are we like?
Tina, take the mic.
Yeah, I interviewed Riti Pan yesterday about his new film, Graves Without a Name, and I mean, this is all about transgenerational trauma.
Yeah.
Right? We've got 65% of Cambodians who were born after 1990 who are dealing, and he basically said we've got four generations at least before we can even begin to think about this not going away, but and I don't even think he would use the word resolved, but at least at a place where people are, I don't know, maybe willing to talk about it or in an honest, meaningful way.
Yeah, I would agree. The level of trauma is, you know, is very disorienting. And however, you know, having said that, I think that, you know, one of the I guess dynamics of, you know, the Indigenous community that fascinates me is what our resilience, how strong it is, like how in my lifetime, you know, I've seen. You know, one, I grew up knowing that there was Indigenous organizations, you know, from the AFN, which, you know, formerly the National Indian Brotherhood, and, you know, the Metro Métis Federation, and the Métis National Council, and, you know, ITK, like all of these organizations, which, you know, when you're a young person growing up, like I grew up, I was sort of the first wave of urban indigenous, you know, youth. And then what we grew up with, these were our parents that were creating these organizations and our relatives, and that were the politicians. And so, you know, you grew up thinking that's how all was. And you find out, oh, my goodness, this just started when I was born. So here we are, you know, and then there's, you know, how fast the pace at which things are changing, which is, you know, I mean, the constitutional talks in 82, you know, which now, I mean, when I was elected in 2006, you know, there, Gary Marasty and I were like literally the fourth and fifth First Nations people to ever be, you know, in the House of Commons. So, and now in the next, but in the last election, I think you had like, there was like over 10, you know, Indigenous people, you know, that were elected into the House of Commons. So like the change is happening very rapidly. And that is because of the kind of resilience that we have and the fact that this is our land. So I think that, you know, in terms of dealing with the trauma, you know, again, on the other hand, I think that the level of trauma has, and the type of trauma that's happened to us has yet to be understood. I really do believe that there is what I call like a nature of sexual violence, you know, that you're seeing in, you know, being addressed by churches in the larger community, but that has had a fierce, completely devastating impact on our lives. And it should never, like, it should I don't even understand it, but I mean, I do know that, like, it's affected all of us personally. It's affected all of our families. And it has, it is like a raging fire. And I think that, you know, we really do need to address this as Canadians. And that needs to be part of understanding each other, you know. And I think that, you know, when you have collaborators that are so willing to work with you and listen and make these kind of projects together, like, I can't even tell you how powerful it is. Like, it's a really powerful medium, and it is going to change the country. I really believe that, you know, it is, art is going to be part of, you know, what is going to create significant change for this country. And I really believe that, I really believe that the indigenization of Canada is something that's going to be wonderful. My father, my mother, I had to speak to the settlement agreement in the House, and you know, as the opposition member, and you know, Phil Fontaine was the national chief who had brought that settlement agreement forward, because there had been a resolution, a mechanism prior to that that wasn't working very well. So I talked to my family and I said, you know, I just feel like I don't want to cry. I don't want to cry in the house. I don't want them to see me crying. I don't want them to know that they've hurt us this much. And my dad said, you know, my girl, they're victims of their own culture too. And my mom said, yeah, you have to pray for them. And I was like, oh man, like, they're so generous. And it was like, I mean, it was something to hold on to, but it's something that I've really come to understand that, you know, we come from a really gracious background and I'm really proud of who we are. And I'm proud that, you know, residential schools weren't our way and that we wouldn't have done that to our own people. And I think so that's our gift. That's our gift moving forward. And, you know, that this collaboration is about, you know, really seeing the gifts of each culture and bringing it forward in a collaboration.
Well, I'm not going to follow up that, Tina.
No footnotes there, no.
You said that was really beautiful, Tina. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be, you can't resolve when you're
right.
Your child's missing, but at least we're not anywhere near that. We're just at the point of understanding.
Is healing, you know, you talked about the collaboration. To me, that's beautiful. That's like, that's an unexpected outcome of making the film together, it seems to me, I know, in a way, right?
Well, not really, because, I mean, that really was the idea.
Oh, yeah, no, it was the idea going in.
Nice.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah. But we didn't know it would work. That's not
No, we did know.
We knew.
I'm kind of a witch, so I won't say that to her.
Excellent.
There's some things I knew. When they say, how do you know this? I go, I don't know. I think I'm a random psychic.
When we turn the recorders off, I'd like to ask you more.
Careful, careful.
And what I was going to say is there healing in that type of collaboration? Is there healing in that kind of relationship? I mean, Richard Wagamese said stories are meant to heal, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder, even this.
Yeah.
This kind of commiseration.
I feel that way, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, of course it is. It's very, yeah.
Yes.
Sadly, we're going to have to wrap up soon, which I always get pretty angry about because I feel like we just get rolling and I got to shut down. But anyway.
Could be a two-parter. You could do a two.
You know what? Maybe we should do two-parter.
Series.
Yeah.
We're back.
You know what? Let's pitch the CBC on an eight-part series.
There you go.
And then we could each take turns being the interviewer.
That would be fun. So, you know, I was on a podcast recently interviewed, and it was really long.
Oh, really?
But it was...
You were interviewed?
I was interviewed.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it was fantastic. So go ahead if you want to.
And you'd be a great one.
All right. We'll think about that.
The film, you know, you talked a little bit, Don, about the land. I love the cinematography in the film,
the shape
of it, the tone, the music's brilliant, remarkable.
Great.
Remarkable.
Yeah, I agree.
Things really shift at the scene, I think, with the bear.
Yeah,
with Will's character,
right?
Yeah,
real conscious decision for you. Maybe that comes out in the book. I haven't read the book.
The bear's in the book,
but it's just that's the moment, and he loses it, but in a measured way,
right. And it's hard to talk about without you being.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
but yes, but just, no, the I bear mean, is, you know, you know, to be perfectly honest, it was a point where the production manager was like, you know, the bear is really expensive. You know, I believe that the bear probably was paid more than any other cast member, to be honest.
That's hilarious.
Because he had two minders, and we had to bring him in, fly him in.
Makeup for the bear?
We honestly did do a little makeup for the bear.
And then,
that's a black magic marker, isn't it?
No, because we wanted...
He had a beach.
First of all,
he had his beach.
We're revealing the fact that it was a male... bear and playing a female, so there's a bit of makeup there.
Okay.
No, but also we sort of dirtied him up a little.
Okay.
Because you know, he's he looked too fresh when he arrived. It's true, right? He looked too robust. You know, he's a healthy, fit.
Very. Yes.
Didn't look like a wild bear, so he did. He was a bit of a prima donna. Let's face it.
I bet the craft budget alone for the bear was...
The craft budget,
Yeah.
And also, by the way, he was the only one... The trainer said, don't be afraid to applaud because he really responds. So
yes.
He needs it.
I know.
We didn't applaud any of the other actors, but the bear, we were always applauding.
There's so many things we haven't talked about. But what was the line? Humans are largely made up of water.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yes, yes.
And I'm going to say it now too. The film is worth the price of admission just for the last sequence. It really is. You went all Terrence Malick on us. It's
well, you know, giving it away. in a way, yeah. It's almost impossible to talk about the ending, but for sure it was something we talked about probably more than anything. Like we talked, Tina and Barbara and I, back and forth, like where do we...
Yes, absolutely.
Because, not to give anything away, but the whole film is about a missing person, a missing family member, and at a certain point there has to be a presence, like a scene, like it's all about where it's a sort of mystery. Where is that person? And that had to be resolved in some way, but not in a trite way. So I'm very proud of the ending. I think we came up with a solution that works. Impossible to talk about.
That's right. Yeah. Well, don't. You don't have... I think we've created enough...
Yeah, yeah. Mystery. You know, what
desire,
is he
mystery.
Going
what the
on
hell
about?
Is he talking about? Yeah. Got to go and see it now. So we're going to wrap it up in a couple minutes, and I've got way more than a one or two last questions, but a really serious film, but I think a really entertaining film as well.
Oh, good.
And engaging. What's next, but what are you hoping for? Is this the kind of film that students in 10 and 20 years are going to be writing essays about? Are you going on a campaign with this? Or is this...
Tina?
This is a story that you hope resonates and changes, or at least starts the conversation, or a conversation.
Well, I have to say that
it's a really easy question.
No, but I mean,
you've got 32 like, and a half seconds.
We didn't. I never imagined those things for this film. Like, it was a story that resonated with me
that needed to be told.
I'm an Indigenous woman who has, I have.
I mean, it's not a propaganda.
It's not a propaganda. Yeah, exactly. On the other hand, we have a network of women across this country that have worked very hard and have been very courageous in, bringing an issue forward, which is now has a national inquiry, continues to, have commentary from, the families. And, so we will be doing screenings with the families. I'm part of a coalition in Manitoba and network across the country, and I've kept the families apprised of, this story. It's not any particular person's story. It's not a true story, but however, this is a story of something that's happened. It's touched all our lives, and the families will be having screenings, and they've asked for that, and we're, proud to to present it. And I do know that, our international distributor is also flying in for the screening.
It is a thing that this is, these sort of issues are extremely unknown. We think in Canada, we can be almost cynical about, we all know about right. Troubles up there, and it's really not. First of all, people don't know, but also they sure don't know internationally. So that's one thing. I mean, for me, I never really think about the effect of the film, how it will change things. But I just wanted to show people what I'd seen and what I'd felt, and I hope that will be enough.
I think it will, for what it's worth.
It'll be enough to make people's difference.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the crucial thing for me is that people don't, are not afraid of looking at Indigenous communities and looking at and just sort of feeling it.
If I can say it, it's going to be disruptive in a good way. But I think it's going to be disruptive and trust and hope that it's going to lead towards some kind of action as well. I mean, disruption's great, but if action doesn't follow, I'm not sure it's all that helpful.
Right?
It might be a creative burst of energy or something, but if it doesn't lead to some sort of, utilitarian outcome or social change or something, then I wonder about it. But that's what I think is so beautiful about the film. It's this story, this narrative that plays like a thriller, frankly.
It has that aspect, right? Well, it is.
And I do think that, I got to say, I think that young Canadians are, in terms of Indigenous stories, I think that, in particular, younger Canadians, millennials, are like a new generation, and they don't have the same sort of baggage, and they don't sort of put on blinders. Like, they do want to know Canada, and they do want to know about the issues, and they do want to know about our history and what went wrong, and how can we change it?
I do feel that too. Yeah. I'm not always up on the millennials, but I feel in this area, I really genuinely feel that they're
not as cynical today.
No, they all know about residential schools, and they know about MMIW. I think they
want to
know.
Well, knowledge is a first step, right?
Yeah,
knowledge towards understanding. One of my favorite lines. We'll kind of wrap up now, and. Yeah. Just know that I'm a little pissed off that we're wrapping up, but it's okay. So we'll talk about part two.
Yeah.
Toronto, ever weird that place. That's one of my faves.
Toronto, ever weird that place.
Yeah.
We've been talking with Tina Keeper and Don McKellar. What a pleasure having you guys on the show today on Face to Face at the Toronto International Film Festival. Get out to see it through Black Spruce, coming soon to a theater near you. Thank you, guys.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince.
I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.